Welcome to Life on the Illinois Prairie. Your host is Wendy Fleming Dexter, and after 30 years living in small town Illinois, she has stories to tell. Past cornfields and factories, into the heart of Amish country. There's more here than what meets the eye, far beyond what you think you know. So buckle up and stay tuned. This is Life on the Illinois Prairie.
Hi, and welcome to this episode of Life on the Illinois Prairie. I'm your host, Wendy Fleming Dexter. Joining me today are Mark and Carol Lawson, the owners of the Unity Chapel event venue. Thank you guys both for being here.
Hello.
Hello.
Thank you for having us.
Well, thank you for being here. I have to thank one of my previous guests for giving me your name. Ann Winkler Hendricks is who gave me your name and told me that you had, I believe, spoken at the Genealogical Society, if I'm not mistaken, or maybe the Historical Society, but she is who gave me your name. And I would like, could each of you please, each in turn, give your background information and how you ended up being a part of this renovation and this new venue that you have?
Okay, I'll start. I was born and raised in Charleston, and my parents are still living. They're still here in town too. I'm one of four kids. And then when I met Mark, we stayed in the area. But as we grew up, my family went to church at Unity Chapel. And so that's how we came across this. And so I went there until I was probably a sophomore or junior in high school. And then then it closed and we went elsewhere. But yeah, so being born in the area, and we live just a couple miles from the church now. And so it was right there on our radar. So that's how we picked it up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah. And I was born and raised in Mattoon. So we were rivals, I guess you could say, through school. But I was raised on a farm. One of six kids. My folks are both gone now, but the rest of us are all around the area. And Carol and I met out in Washington, D.C. on a 4-H trip is the way we got together.
Oh, my gosh.
So it was kind of neat that way. I just remember going by the little church as a kid. And then, like Carol said, we got the chance to purchase it. And here we go.
Oh, well, that is such a cool story that you guys grew up, you know, within miles of each other, but met in Washington, D.C. How cool is that?
It is. Yep. And we dated and got married young at 18 and then had four boys of our own. And they live around the area. Oh. And so we have eight grandchildren.
Oh, well, how wonderful. And are they all close to you, too, in proximity? Are they all close?
Yeah, most of them are. We have one granddaughter and son that they live in Washington, Illinois, but everyone else lives here in town.
Uh-huh. Well, that's got to be so rewarding, because so many people that I know have their grandchildren live so far away, and they don't get to see them nearly as often as they'd like, so... What a blessing for you and for your grandchildren to be able to have those memories created with you guys. So you want to share your story about Unity Chapel, how it has to be. I believe I told you somewhere along the way that Stacy and I had attended this small country church that was forced to close because the membership just wasn't there. And I think when they're in the age of so these mega churches and these huge gatherings, the closeness that is developed in those small churches, and the feeling of unity that you get there is just something that you can't get at a big church. I don't care where you are, what the music is, what the message is. You can't duplicate that feeling in those big churches, and it gives me goosebumps now to even think about it. And when that little church that we went to closed, it was just heartbreaking. So I could imagine to you, it must have been pretty sad to see it close, but at the same time, then to have the opportunity to buy it, that must have been a gift from God, a sign for you.
Yeah, that's for sure. Going there, like you said, most of my dad's side of the family went to that church, my uncles and my grandma and grandpa and all of us. And like you said, the membership just was dwindling. And so we didn't have enough people attending to keep it open. And at one point, we became Unity Chapel United Methodist. So when that church closed, then most of the membership then went to the Methodist church in town. Some of us stayed together, but like you said, it was a bigger church. Unity Chapel had a great youth group that I was a part of. We had great leaders, youth leaders, and we did, you know, so many activities and things like that and friendships made. And then when we got the church going and started my Facebook page, some of those members have contacted us back that went to the church. So they're kind of following the Facebook posts and stuff like that. So it's kind of neat that we have a connection again with those folks.
Oh, yeah. It really gives a renewed sense of the word Unity Chapel, that is coming back, reuniting people like that.
Yes. And when we purchased the church, then I checked with one of, he's a cousin, but yet he went to the church at the same time, and he's a pastor in Indiana. And I asked him, I said, is there a problem with me renovate or, you know, using the name Unity Chapel again, you know, with on the church, you know? And he said, no, he said, you go right ahead. You know, that's what it was. And you can use that name again. So that's what we did.
Wow. So did you have to go through any formal, I know it was as a small church, I don't know if it's the same as it would be in a bigger church, but is there any kind of a decommissioning or a deconsecrating of that space to keep it from, you know, as it was as a church? No?
No, there wasn't anything like that because after Carol's group had left, then for a few years in there, Pilgrim Holiness had taken it over. And what they had done is they left after doing a little bit of renovations. They put in some fans and they added a little bathroom on one side. But what they did is they let a neighbor take it over, and that neighbor then was to take care of the ground, the cemetery, and so forth. And he was using it then as storage. So really, it never got decommissioned. It just wasn't used. Mm-hmm. And so we got to put it all back together, and away we went again.
Oh, wow. Well, I've seen your pictures that you've done, and I guess, Mark, most of that is your handiwork as a carpenter and construction person. Is that most of that your sweat equity that you've put into that?
Exactly. It actually, I would say 85% of it is Carol and I. And then we would drag the boys down here now and then on weekends and say, hey, help us put the ceiling in. And we did use an outside contractor on the roof. I'm getting to the age she doesn't want me on the roof anymore. we did use a contractor for heating and air. But otherwise, everything else we've done ourselves.
Mm-hmm. When we took the church over, it was a year ago in January 2024. And owner's son, the people we bought it from, he was cleaning out the main level, and then we started on the basement while we were, you know, working out the financial end of it. And so it was full. Both levels were totally full of stuff. And so we started cleaning. He was cleaning. We got it all cleaned out. We used our grandkids. They came and helped a little bit. And then there was... Mark can talk about the state of the church. I mean, there was termite damage and things like that, if he wants to.
It was in such poor shape.
Oh, gosh.
The very front entryway, termites had got in. So there's about a 5x8 area in the very front that is over a crawl space. The rest of the church is over a basement. But all the floor joists had rotted out from underneath that little crawl space. The floor had kind of settled in that front end. So, and part of the main beam going through the basement was rotted. So we had to replace it, replace the floor joists. Then we ended up tearing out all the front steps, all the entryway in the front. We poured all new banisters. There was a little patio in the front where you would walk up. It was all broke up. We tore it all out. It was... There was no steps going to the basement. We just had a stepladder that went from the basement to the upstairs. It was rough, but it was a fun project.
Yeah. It took us about 10 months because we had our first activity November then of that year.
Yeah. But
so in about 10 months, Mark and I did all those renovations. The original carpet was still in there when I went to church. I don't know if you remember in your little church, and the red carpet up the middle and this red carpet up on the stage, you know. So, yeah, from the 60s and 70s. So we had to rip that out and do that. One of my favorite parts that we saved out of part of that renovation of the stage, because we had to recenter it, Mark took some old beams out of it so we could center it back in the middle of the church. And out of those beams, we made a cross. So we made a big wooden cross. And then the original rope to the bell, because we still have the bell and the bell tower, the original rope was still in the church. So we took it, Mark fixed the cross so that I could braid the rope on it. So we've got a wooden cross from the original church and the bell rope from the original church on the cross. So that's pretty important to me.
Oh, I would say so. You know, you go by so many places. Stacy and I, when we're driving around or traveling someplace, like to stop at small cemeteries along the way. And how often do we see the bell there as the only thing surviving out of these small churches that have stood over the years that have vanished, you know?
Exactly.
And to be able to still have that, how exciting is that?
And they had given it away to two different families if they could get it, but they couldn't get it out of the bell tower. So fortunately, it was still there. We got back up on top of that thing and got a new rope, got it all put back in. So after the weddings, we let the bride and groom ring the bell then. So it's a lot of fun.
So what really led you to, of course, I know you couldn't buy that and have another church. Don't think that would have probably worked out. But what led you to the idea of having an event space like you have?
I don't know what
we had originally said we would like to find a house and flip it, and we couldn't find one reasonable. So we thought, we kept driving by the little church because it is just a couple mile from our house. We would drive by and we said, the poor little thing looks sad. So wonder if we could buy that and fix it up. We didn't know for what. I do have my license to marry and bury, but we said maybe we could do some weddings or something like that. And then one thing led to another. People started calling, and family reunions, birthday parties, you name it.
Yeah, originally, like I said, we were just going to open it up for weddings, small weddings and stuff like that. But as Mark said, then people said, well, you know, can we have a birthday there or a reunion? One of my youth leader from Unity Chapel, his family came in for a family reunion last May. And so he was so excited to do that because his family went to that church and everything like that. So to bring everybody back in, he was excited. And I don't know, I guess people kept saying, well, there's no place to have any small events in the area, you know, or if you don't want to have it in your house, you know. So, I just put it out there.
Yeah, or if you want to, you know, you could have them in a fire hall or something, but a fire hall doesn't have that kind of an ambiance, that kind of, it's still a sacred space that you have there. And I think that for people to have that kind of a sacred space to have a wedding, or if they don't have their own church home, or to have a reunion, that kind of thing, I think that's a wonderful opportunity for them. I didn't mean just to walk on your words there, Carol.
Oh, no, you're fine. You're fine. So, yeah, and like I say, we've 4-H has used it. We've had baby showers, bridal showers, weddings, birthdays. We've had a sorority rent it for their meeting. that we had that vendor fair. That was one of our first events. We had a small vendor fair. So just kind of a variety of things.
And you put in a kitchenette. If I saw the pictures too, that you have a kitchen now in there that people can also use. That's another great convenience.
Yeah. When we started, there was no restroom. Kitchenettes. Wow. We sort of had water, but not really. So we put in a new pump. Then we added one restroom. Then we added another. And then we said, you know, what if somebody has some dishes after a potluck? So we added a little kitchenette. We did find a used refrigerator and put in there. And then we kept it all. We didn't have quite enough cabinets. So we sat down one weekend. We built our own cabinets even for it. And we took some stuff out of one shop, repainted it, put it in that one. So everything's been repurposed that's back in there. So it's really nice. The basement was just concrete walls and a concrete floor. Hmm. So we studded it all out. We got it all wired up. We put in a base, a restroom down there, beadboard on the walls, carpet on the floors, new lights, everything like that. Now we're putting a handicap ramp into the backside so people can actually get into the basement without going through the upstairs then.
Oh, that's so nice. And this has been such a passion project for the two of you to do. I mean, I know it has to have just been so much work and yet so rewarding, especially for something that's so close to your heart to start with.
Mm-hmm. Yes, for sure. Yeah, it's taken a lot of time. We have spent a lot of weekends down there because we both work full time. Yeah. Yep.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, it's one thing if you're retired and taking on a project like that, but when you both work, I mean, that's not much different than people taking on a project like that when they have small children. You know, how do you find the time to do everything, you know?
Correct.
But it's great you have some of those grandkids that you could recruit and put them to work. That's good too. You know, I'm sure that we were both put to work when we were little.
Definitely.
Okay, yeah. Maybe I wouldn't. I had to weed my share of beans. I weeded my share of beans, but my dad didn't let me drive a tractor, Mark. I was forbidden to get on any farm equipment because my mother I was one of six kids too, and I was the only girl. Oh. And my dad told my mom, Daddy told my mom, when they first married, and he said, he let her drive the tractor, but he said, if you come to a wet spot, don't try to get out. Just stop. Well, she must have not heard half of the sentence because she tried to get out, and it was the time he found her. It was buried up to the axles, and Daddy was not very happy.
Not good.
But neither of us ever got on. she sealed the deal for me that I didn't have to do anything on the tractor.
Yeah.
But back to the venue, I think that is, you know, do you do anything like, have you had anybody approach you to do live music to come there and have a get together?
Not yet. I mean, it's been in the back of my mind to do something like that. Mm-hmm. We had a Christmas Eve service this past year, and it was nice. Mark, read the Christmas story, and then I am part of a a cappella quartet. It's called Sweet and Salty, and we sang a few songs, and then we had congregation, you know, sing Christmas songs and stuff with us, and so that was nice. And then we had a candlelight, you know, we did the safe ones, you know, or the battery candles, and so half of it was candlelight, it was nice.
Nice. There again, I think that's one of those things. You can have a candlelight service or you can have any service in a larger church, but the intimacy and the closeness that you feel in a small place like that, you can't duplicate it any place. You know, I think that those of us who have had that experience in a small church or a more unified setting like that, you just yearn for that. I think, you know,
yes.
And you hear the old hymns, and it just takes you back to that time where the world was a much simpler place. Yeah. And I think to be able to step back in that in your venue would be a wonderful thing for people. So so you have all those things you mentioned. Is there anything else? You've had showers and weddings, and have you had a funeral there? You had anything like a funeral dinner, anybody getting together after there who didn't have a church?
We haven't had a funeral there yet, but we have had a lot of dinners. So what we can do, we actually added 14 feet to the one end of the church. And so we store pews in the back so we can pull those out or put them away, or we can bring the tables and chairs out. So we actually bought some pews from another church that was closing. Yeah, it worked out really good that way. But so far, we've just had the one service like that.
Well, I think, you know, probably the trend seems to be so much more toward a celebration of life in many cases than the traditional funeral that we grew up with, you know, with the visitation and the funeral. I think the celebration of life has taken a whole new importance to most people in trying to focus on the, you know, the joy of the person who lived and not just the fact that they're gone and celebrating what their life meant. So that may be something else that once, you know, word gets out. And I do think, I mentioned you, Carol, about getting in touch with the TV stations. I think that, you know, it's a wonderful way to get your message out, too. I hope to be able to get it out this way, too. But, you know, and I've discovered through my podcast and other things that social media only goes so far. And we don't have, you know, the media, the print media we used to have here, our local newspapers are not what they were, just like our churches are not what they were back in those days. Sometimes it's a little harder to get that word out, but, you know, I think you have so many wonderful opportunities there.
Yes. And one of the weddings that we have coming up this fall, she was just elated with the, like you say, the charm, the original woodwork, the original floor. That's just what she was looking for her wedding, you know, not a big mega church or something like that. So, we do have that, you know, to offer. Speaking of funerals, back to funerals, Mark, part of the, when we bought the church, it also included the little cemetery next to us. So we actually own the cemetery too, and it's it has a lot of history in it. It was a pauper cemetery when you know, way back when, and so there's a lot of old stones and things like that. And now Mark works for Adams Memorials, so it works that if we have a stone that needs repaired or painted or cleaned up or whatever, now he has the know-how and the capability to do that.
So it's pretty cool.
Well, that's pretty handy.
Yeah.
You're a pretty handy guy to have around, Mark.
Well, she thinks so.
you're earning your keep.
Yep.
Oh, wow. So, and I saw in your pictures, Carol, that you had some family furniture that I think had been your grandmother's.
Yes.
The glider and different things that you have there, too, that gives even more depth to this walk down memory lane.
Yeah, that's right. And I thought, you know, that would be a good place for grandma's, you know, items like that. The glider, my son, it was at his house because he bought grandma's house when she moved. And and she left it there for him. So he just asked, he said, would you guys, and it needed repainted, had like four layers of paint on it and stuff. So we got it cleaned up and repainted and took it to the church. And then I also had grandma's little drop leaf table and four chairs, you know, the original, I can't think, what's the
dinette set.
Well, dinette chrome. Yeah. And so we repainted the chrome and got it. We have it downstairs now. And then I also brought my other grandma, my mom's side of the family, Grandpa and Grandma Crail. I brought their Bible down, and it's on the little table when you walk in the front door. Their big Bible is there with their name in the front when they got married. So
Does it make you feel their spirits when you have all those things around you with them? I don't know if they're the type of person to feel that, but I mean, to me, it's such a sacred space, and to have those things in there would make me feel even more that they're there with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That their spirits are there with you.
Just keeping the the memory fresh, and it's it's just something that, you know, I thought, well, and then my kids are the grandkids, the ones that helped us a lot redo the church and stuff. They're hoping that grandma and grandpa pass the church on to them.
Oh, I bet they are.
Yeah.
After you did all the work.
Right.
Well, I guess they probably helped some too.
Yes.
But yeah. No, that's just one of those things that I can't help but think of this church that we'd gone to, and I look at it now, and I don't mean to say anything negative against the people that live there, and I love animals too, but there's, like, you know, this turkeys and chickens and a grill up on the front, the steps leading up to the church. And I mean, it's just totally disrespected for the meaning of what it was, you know, for the purpose it was built for. And I realize life goes on and things change, but I've seen many, many, many churches, as we all have, that have been renovated and repurposed, and that was not one of them.
Uh-oh.
This one has just gone to the dogs, so to speak. And in this case, the chickens and the turkeys and and I love peacocks, but, you know, I never thought I'd see one on the church church steps by an old nasty grill.
Yeah.
But there it is. I'm so excited that you guys didn't have that outcome for your Unity Chapel.
That's right. Yes.
So if you got more to tell, Carol, you guys go ahead. If you got more things you want to tell, please do.
Well, we still have the original handwritten deed for when Mr. Brown gave the grant, and it's on lined paper. So when he wrote it, it was like a steno pad. So we had to make a double-sided frame glass on both sides, because you have to turn it as you read it. You have to flip the pages. And so we wanted everybody to be able to see that. So we made a real long glass frame, and it's all in that. And when we have gatherings, we bring it out, and you can actually read the deed as Mr. Brown told it. So it's really neat like that.
Yeah, and Mr. Brown, he deeded that land to the community for the building of that church. And this was in 1878,
I believe.
1878, okay. And then, so they all the community came together and built the church, and it was Brown's Chapel. And then
in 1937, it caught fire and burnt. So the congregation, as well as everybody from Charleston, and the guys would walk out there. And they worked for about a year and rebuilt it. So then the chapel decided we need to pay for it. And there were no bills. Everybody had just paid for everything. So they said, well, we're still going to call it Brown's Chapel. And Mr. Brown said, no, it's not mine. This belongs to the community. So that's how it got to be called Brown's Unity Chapel. Is Mr. Brown still donated it, but he wanted Unity put in that name. And so that's the way it pulls up, like on a Google map. If you look for the cemetery, you have to look for Brown's Unity Cemetery, but the church will show up as Unity Chapel.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And my cousins, Jim and Carolyn Craig, they had, when the church closed, they had kept a big tub full of
memorabilia.
Yeah, like old attendance records and the financial records. And that's where we found the deed. It was in there, and the original deed. And so when they moved away, they gave it to us because they knew we weren't going anywhere. We're here. And so we kept the tub. And had it upstairs. So every once in a while, we'd look in it or whatever, didn't even think about it. And then when we bought the church, we've got the history of the church now, because a lot of it was in that tub. So that's when we pulled out the deed. When we had an open house, we brought a lot of the papers and the books and all that kind of stuff and laid them out on the tables for everybody to look at when they came for the open house. And things like that. And then I have I've got a little showcase box thing also at the church, and I put just a few items in there so people want to look at them or whatever. But we have all of that history too.
And that's the thing that, you know, it's a recurring theme that seems to come up on this podcast so often is the history and how and roots and how so many people could care less about that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so many of us care so deeply about it, you know. And I realize, you know, necessity, sometimes people have to relocate because of jobs and employment and all sorts of reasons they have to go. But for those of us, I can go 2 miles up the road and be in the place where my grandmother was born and raised. And that's very important to me. Mm-hmm. I'll live in my old ramshackle farmhouse the day I die. I don't care about all the trappings of all the stuff. You know, I just want to live in my house and be near where my family, you know, one Ellison family owned a lot of land over in this neck of the woods. They don't now, of course, but, you know, it just means something to me to have that connection. And I think for you guys to have that connection to that place and put your heart and souls into it is I just admire it a lot. Mm-hmm. So what is the physical location? Where is the Unity Chapel located? I know Stacy grew up in Charleston. He'll recognize the...
Well, it's if you come west out of Charleston on Route 16 and you go, you know, across, we call the Twin Bridges, you know, across the bridges there. And at the bottom of the hill, you're going to turn south. So you'll turn left. And at the top, when you come up around the corner, there is, we call it Drake Subdivision, Drake Homes. You're going to go south there. And you're going to go about 2 miles, okay. Or 1 mile. Mark says it's 1 mile. And then at the bottom, you cross a creek and you're going to turn right and go up the top of the hill. And it's right there. It's only like, what, 2.5, 3 miles out of town.
He's nodding his head. He knows the location. Right. Yeah. Nope. Yeah. We drive spent many afternoons putting miles on our vehicles, driving around aimlessly, I look for things in Amish country where I'm at. And when we're down there, you know, the difference of the landscape between Mattoon and then what's at Charleston. And it's just amazing to me, the difference, in the geography, topography and everything there.
The hills and hollers.
Yeah, he knows where that is.
And we encourage, if people see us out there working or our vehicles there, you know, we encourage people to stop and visit, and we'd love to give tours. So.
Oh, well, wonderful. So, are you going to have the Christmas event again this year, your Christmas Eve handlight service, or?
I believe we will. Mm-hmm. The people that attended were, they really liked the format and they loved being there and just the simplicity of it. So yeah, we'll probably do it again.
Yeah. There again, it's a place where, you know, if you don't know somebody when you walk in, by the time you walk out, you're generally going to know people. And after a few times, you know, I'm still going back to the everyday Sunday services, but, you know, it is an intimate setting where you get to know the person is sitting next to you. They're likely not a stranger. And coming together on a Christmas Eve candlelight service like that to me is just, I just think it brings back the happy spirits of all the people that inhabited that church over the years, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When we had our Christmas Eve service last year, we had some people that didn't come to church regularly. And one of them had said, well, if I go to church, it may fall in. I said, I know I've done a better job than that. And as he walked to the front, a beam moved in the basement. It made a terrible popping noise. Everybody thought it was falling. And actually what it did, it was leveling itself out. And it was perfectly level. We went down and checked it. It's like, oh, my land, it is going to fall. But, hey, we had about 55 people in there like that. And before that, it had always been 4 or 5. But we actually had 50 people, and it just, the church said, oh, I like it. And it's never done any noise again.
Yeah, no kidding.
So, yeah.
It's giving a sigh of relief saying I'm finally in use for, I feel useful again.
Yep, exactly.
I'm back.
That's right.
How fun. How fun. Well, you guys, this has just been a lot of fun. So exciting to talk to you. If you don't have anything else you have to offer, if you got more, keep it coming. You're more than welcome to.
Oh, well, we are expanding a little bit outside. Like Mark said, we've got the handicap entrance in the front of the building, so you can get to the main level. And so currently now we're working on the handicap entrance to the basement. And then as you come around the back of the church to go in, we're also going to put a little patio out back. It's such a quiet, peaceful place back there. And so we're going to just put a little patio, you know, maybe grandma's glider on it, you know, a little bit more seating and stuff. And, you know, It's just a peaceful place to come and sit. There's nature, there's deer, you know, we've got red-tail hawks, you know, things like that around. Mm. And so we're just going to put a little seating area out back and maybe a little gas fire thing, you know, a little gas...
fire table.
Fire table.
Carpet.
Yeah. And then, on the evenings, someone, you know, could sit out there and just enjoy themselves.
Well, it just sounds absolutely heavenly to me. And being I wasn't trying to be funny there, but did seem to tie into the church theme. So, would you give your contact information, the physical address of the church, and how to get a hold of you guys in the case somebody would like to use your space?
Sure. Our email address is unitychapel24@gmail.com. The address, the physical address, if you want to Google it, it's 13650 East County Road, 620 North in Charleston. And then we are on Facebook. Mm-hmm. Right now, that's the only way we advertise, Facebook and word of mouth. It is Unity Chapel Event Space. And the reason we did add an event space after Unity Chapel is because Unity Chapel was taken. So... I had to add something to for it to have a Facebook page. So Unity Chapel Event Space. And I respond to the emails. I had two new ones today for possible rentals this fall. So if anybody, you know, wants to check into pricing and availability, just drop me an email and I'll respond.
Well, we'll sure do our part on this end to try to help spread the word, because I think what you've done is just a wonderful thing, and I'm happy for you. I'm happy that you've gotten to renovate this space and keep it such a positive and meaningful place, and not just for you, but it'll be meaningful for other people. And
We hope people can build their memories.
yeah, exactly. And like I said, a lot of people don't have their own church home, and you know, if you don't, you can go to a back room in a restaurant, but it's not the same. It's not the same when you got people running in and out, and you have to drag your gifts in through everybody. You know, it's just not the same. It just doesn't have that feel that you have of what you've created. So I'm going to have to get there myself someday, Stacy. Let's go have an event.
That's for sure.
We can't get married. We already did that. We surprised people when I launched this podcast. I had said told people we're going to have a podcast launch party at Lytle Park, and we invited several people. What we didn't tell them was we were going to get married. We did tell the minister at this little church I was telling you about. He knew, and Stacy's brother knew, but nobody else knew. It was a potluck. So, you know, we got off people, brought the food. That's not being chintzy, is it? But and I said, we would sing. A lot of people hadn't heard us sing, and I had a brother up from Texas, and so he and his wife were going to be there, and so... So I said, well, let's just get married there, but not tell anybody. So we sang a few songs, and then there was this little screen behind us that was blocking off the water fountain. And so I got behind that screen and pulled my plastic flowers out. And I went, da, 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 da. And down the aisle I went.
Wow.
And these people, you could hear everybody going, what? Oh my God, they're getting married. I don't know if they were surprised we were getting married there, or if just that, you know, each one of us probably lost our mind and we were getting married at all, because, you know, we've been down, unlike you guys, we didn't pick we didn't make the right choice the first time around. So didn't have the right stick to stick-to-itiveness that you guys did.
We've been married almost 48 years.
48?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Yep. How is that possible? Mark, it was just last month or so we were working together at Eisner's. How did that happen?
I don't know.
And I don't know.
Eisner's came up this morning at work. We were talking about
it, really?
Yeah, with my boss. He's like, now, where was that at? Because he would shop in Charleston Eisner's. And I said, well, I worked at Matt Toon one. So it was so funny.
Yeah. I worked at the Matt Toon one. And then I was the union steward. And for some reason, I went to Charleston and I worked there a while.
Yep.
So I guess that was my highlight of my younger years was being the union steward because I could go to battle with management over all sorts of stuff, you know.
Yes.
And get away with it.
Yes, exactly.
Well, gosh, you guys, this has been so much fun. And if you have events coming up in the future or things you want to talk again, well, we will get together. And I want to thank Mark and Carol Lawson for being here today.
Well, thank you for having us.
Thank you very much.
It's been a real pleasure. And that's it for this episode of Life on the Illinois Prairie. Please like my Facebook page. And if you have something positive to leave in the way of a review, do it there. Thank you. If you got something negative to say, don't say anything at all. Thank you, everyone. And please be kind. Thanks for listening to Life on the Illinois Prairie, the undercurrents of our American life. If you haven't yet, go ahead and subscribe to Life on the Illinois Prairie wherever you get your podcast. Stay tuned for more stories, interviews, and updates. I'm your host, Wendy Fleming Dexter. Until next time.
Produced by Audavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.